This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
This podcast is brought to you by eHarmony, the dating app to find someone you can be yourself with. Why doesn't eHarmony allow copy and paste in first messages? Because you are unique, and your conversations should reflect that. eHarmony wants you to find someone who will get you. How are you going to know who gets you? If people send you the same generic conversation starters, they message everyone else. Conversations that actually help you get to know each other. Imagine that. Get who gets you on eHarmony. Sign up today.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to Green and White, the weekly Argyle Life podcast. Well, as we have, it's the two Fs. We've got Fraser.
Good evening.
Finn.
Hello.
And I'm your host, Nick. Where to start? Of course, draw with Accrington at the weekend, but obviously transfer window closing 2 days back as we record this. Some unexpected departures in that. Obviously, Scott Wootton out. Frank Nublay out. Obviously, in the window, we saw Telford leave, Canavan leave, both of those for undisclosed deals, so they're permanently gone, whereas Wootton and Nublay are both gone on loan for 6 months, and as far as I'm aware, both their contracts expire at the end of the season, so that might be the last they've ever played for Argyle. Of course, Timmy Abraham had his loan ended just before the beginning of the January transfer window, and we've seen Niall Ennis, very good home debut. I think that was his home debut, right?
Yeah.
Against Accrington. Good goal. Very good goal. We've got in Adam Lewis, left wing back. Goal on debut at Sunderland. And of course, we've also got Sam Woods as the latest, right? New centre back. Crystal Palace on loan. That's it, right? I haven't missed anyone.
Nope.
No,
I think that's right.
So, Fraser, go ahead. You know, I think you want to talk Wootton, don't you?
Yeah, I think on the whole, it was quite a good window. I mean, it was absolutely mind-blowingly crazy. I mean, I don't think any of us expected what happened near the end. And I'm not about to say that Scott Wootton is the second coming of Amanda Vidic, but it seems to be a little bit risky, potentially. You know, we've now got, other than Ameson, we've only got children in defence.
And loanees at that.
Yeah, well, I don't want to see. You know, don't get me wrong. I think they're doing. You know, we've seen them improve, and they've the last couple of weeks they've been performing very well. And by all accounts, you know, we've got another. You know, Woods is obviously Premier League pedigree, so he should be pretty good. But it's a little bit risky. I think we'll get away with it. I don't think we'll go down or anything drastic like that. But probably without another centre back, I probably wouldn't have got rid of Canavan and Wootton, and only bought in a loanee from the higher divisions. I'd probably would have looked for, a bit more experience. I'm not going to try and pronounce the guy from Ipswich's name, because I'll just make myself sound like an idiot, and I've got plenty of time on this podcast to do that yet. He would have probably been a nice addition, but obviously it wasn't to be. So there we go.
See, Wootton was obviously surprising because I think it was day before deadline day, so 31st of January. We wake up on Sunday morning, see Alan Nixon saying there's interest from Wigan for a loan for Wootton, which I don't think anyone sort of expected. And then obviously that materialised on the Monday. And then also out of nowhere, this was rumoured about half an hour earlier by the local journo for Colchester, just said that he'd heard that there might be a loan on for Nublay, and then, you know, what, half an hour later, Nublay's gone on loan, and that was, you know, there's no preamble to that, that was just gone. And all of a sudden,
that was really weird, wasn't it? It was a bit like out of nowhere, but you know.
So I mean, net we are down a striker because obviously we saw down three actually. Abraham, Telford, Nubley out, and only one in the form of Ennis.
Oh, then Hardy counts as an incoming.
He doesn't because we had him before and we've still got him now. What we've essentially done is extended his contract, technically. In terms of how this squad looks, we are not saying we've got a new striker, Ryan Hardy, in for the second half of the season, are we?
No.
So we're down two strikers, and obviously we've seen our two most experienced centre-backs, bar Sawyer. Well, I mean, Sawyer's... Where is Sawyer?
Where is Sawyer?
Sawyer's as useful to us as Lewis McLeod at this point. Shame about Lewis McLeod, the never-ending injury. So we've lost Wootton and Canavan and brought in a guy with three professional appearances or starts to his name, is that right?
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, our starting back three is more than good enough to stay up. I'm not sure it's good enough to reach the playoffs. That's absolutely fine by me. But if one of them goes out, particularly if it's Ameson, think about how young and inexperienced that defence is then looking. Bold. It's very bold.
I think that's the word for it, though. I think it is bold. I think whilst there's that element of risk, I think it's quite... Hallett is almost showing his true colours now. I think the window is actually quite clever. In that we've freed up some salary, we've also made some transfer fees, and I don't think we've made the team notice. We've weakened the depth, but probably not the quality, if that makes sense. So I think I think Ennis will also prove to be a signing bought preemptively for the departure of Jeffcott. And obviously we've got quite a few people in the team on 2.5 year contracts, which make them valuable, especially given I think they're all under the age of 26. So it's a bit risky, but the reason I think bold is the right word for it is because I think on the whole picture of a football club rather than let's say just a football team, I think it actually is quite clever what we've done. Albeit, the worst of injury crises could scupper our plans. But I think, in all likelihood, that's not going to happen. We're not going to see, loads and loads of injuries, touch wood. So I think it will work quite well.
Yeah, I agree. I think, obviously football isn't a business, but it very much felt like a window sort of, a bit of short-term loss for long-term gain, and we haven't really lost that much, as in, Nubley, Telford, Canavan. But I would have maybe expected he would have left for personal reasons anyway, just because of, where he lives in the country and stuff, and he was only on a one-year contract, I think. But, I think under greatest respect to the four that went out, I wouldn't really see them being in the team next year. So it's probably, in terms of numbers, we are a bit lacking, but in terms of the acquisitions we made, probably quite smart as a whole.
I definitely wouldn't hesitate to have kept Canavan, but
I wouldn't have hesitated. I was just saying that I didn't think he would stay even if he had the choice.
It's smart on Lowe's part if his contract's running out and he's thinking about moving north, and you've been offered a transfer fee. Of course, I'm all for
I don't know that. That was just.
We're pretty certain that his contract. We think his contract was up, and I'm pretty certain Lowe said it, and Lowe's confirmed all that kind of stuff. So I'm sort of in favour of that. On Nubley, it was an odd one signing in the first place. Not sure if you remember my ranting when he first joined. I did not think he was going to work. Quick side note, because I was remembering this when he first signed, because he played on the left wing for Colchester, in the same way that Jake Jervis used to play on the right wing for us, Sam was convinced he was going to be a left wing back. And honestly, the amount of time I spent convincing him that just because he played on the wing, that doesn't make you a wing back. It was so infuriating.
I quite liked Nublé's personality, to be fair. Like, I know he wasn't everyone's cup of tea, but I think he seemed like one of football's good guys. I know that doesn't necessarily mean a great deal, but he seemed like quite a fun character. And you know, those two games where he held the ball in the corner were pretty amusing.
That'll live long in the memory.
But, you know, it seems to me from the reaction from Colchester and the reaction from Nublé that talk, that there'd been a little bit of talking about that for a while, perhaps. It seemed very sort of, although it was kept under wraps, it seemed sort of like it was coming in a weird way when you look at the Colchester page, and how the club reacted to it. So, you know, maybe the move here just didn't click to him for the right reason or something.
I remember a podcast he did with, it must have been just a friend, when he just joined, and he said, well, the reasons for coming here were to play up top, which he did. Because you know, in his previous spells at Colchester and Newport, he played out wide, and he wanted to play in a more central role. He did that, but he also talked about turning down a longer contract, I believe, at another League One club for Argyle, because he thought that he liked the style of play, and he could start. You know, getting starts was important for him.
It was also the playing up front element, whereas that other team wanted to play him out wide in the left again, I think.
Yeah, quite. Yeah, so. So, you know, he did get a spell in the team, but
he had his chance. He had chances to score.
Yeah, he did have his chance, and unfortunately, that's football, isn't it? So,
at the end of the day, if he back at a time when, let's not forget, Telford and Hardy were failing to put their chances away, he'd banged them in the back of the net, and he went through a spell where he actually got chances and, you know, didn't finish him.
He had the most shots at one point, didn't he? Do you remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, like I say, he had his chance. He was the one who failed to, a bit like Telford. Telford's in the same boat. I won't be surprised if Telford's able to turn it around. That doesn't mean I think he will. And I feel a bit sorry for him going to Newport. He's now, competing with Nicky Maynard and so many others they've got there.
Patrick Almond.
Yeah.
Like good League Two strikers. Not that Telford
isn't. Yeah, if you miss your chances there, you're not getting back in the team for a while.
No.
But at the end of the day, his attacking movement was good. He was smart, intelligent in terms of the way he attacked. He, you know, had some good passes in him as well. Purely came down to finishing again. And you know what, that happens. And you know, if you want to think about it this way, go back a year, or just over a year now, and no one would have had Jeffcott scoring this many goals.
Oh, absolutely
not. And you know, if Telford can just get back into the habit of putting away chances, like he did Bury, where he converted nearly, I think it was one in two of his shots. He had a 40% conversion rate.
Yeah.
If he can get even remotely close to that, he's going to find his way back in League One.
Yeah, definitely. I think the thing with Telford is injuries just disrupted his time here. You know,
in the first season, definitely. Can't really say that so much this season. This season was purely around finishing.
The strikers we've got up front at the moment, you know, especially like Jeffcott's the first name on the team sheet, isn't he? And that takes up one spot. And I think although Hardy had a bit of a cold patch, Hardy and Jeffcott just work so well together. You know, it's
that is like a striking partnership. When you talk about striking partnerships, that would be like a striking partnership. And that's why I thought when Hardy, because Nublé, that's what I thought. As soon as Hardy came in, I was like, well, it's going to be hard for Nublé to get in this team just purely because of how well Hardy and Jeffcott
worked together. At the same time, look, Telford could have been nearly at double figures by the end of November, given the chances he's had. You know, we added these up, and granted, it's in all competitions. He could have had two or three against Leighton Orient away. He should have scored against who was it? He should have scored against Shrewsbury. Should have scored against Cheltenham in the EFL Cup. You know, at a time when other people weren't scoring, Telford would have been in the team if he put a few away. Same for Newbley. It's a case of whoever strikes takes it. At a time when Jeffcott was injured, don't forget, and therefore couldn't play.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you look at Ryan Lowe and you think, well, our biggest strength in our team is chance creation, right? We create a hell of a lot of chances every game, pretty much. And at least one good chance every game. And Ryan Lowe's a striker, so he's not going to stick around very much. If you're not, the thing is with Hardy is when he wasn't scoring, he was still contributing to the overall attack.
Yeah.
Telford, unfortunately, and Nuble kind of weren't able to do it to the same level. So.
And as soon as Jeffcott came back, he closed the space for them because why are you starting Telford over? Good question. Why would you start Telford over Jeffcott? Cough, cough, Fleetwood away. Fleetwood's another one where Telford had that chance in the opening few minutes, you know? If he puts that away at 1-0, potentially different. Yeah. It's just, he had his chances. He's just like Nuble. But Telford's problem now is going to be, I doubt he's going to play for another team that can create chances for him in the same way that we did. There are teams like that emerging, but it doesn't mean they're doing as well as we had. So that's probably going to be his struggle is getting in the team, but also getting in a team that can create chances for him.
And then you look at the little cameos that Ennis has had, and he looked promising as well.
On what you guys were saying earlier about the transfer window, I'm sort of halfway to what you, Finn and Fraser, both thinking that it's good. This potentially is a short-term negative window in that as a squad, granted we've got a better striker in Ennis, but as a squad we're weaker, particularly in defence, and we haven't backed up McLeod, who could be injured for months for all we know. We're weaker coming out of January than we were going in. But so long as I don't mind finishing a few places lower in mid-table this season, if it means we finish a few places higher
into the
promotion race next season.
What's the difference between 14th and 10th when you can finish 6th instead of 9th next season?
Yeah, but the problem with that is, so I'm all for the fine, Canavan's gone, we've got a bit of money from him, but what benefit are we getting? What tangible benefit are we getting from Wootton going... We're saving a bit of money on wages, more on Wootton than Nuble, of course, because Nuble came in when we had the wage cap limit. So more on Wootton than Nuble. But at the same time, we have that wage cap in place next season. And I doubt we're going to be that money we saved on wages is going to be spent next season. So is it going to go on to transfer fees?
Well...
How are those two loan outs going to help us? And then the flip is that, what we're doing right now is we're improving Opoku. Opoku's definitely a better player than when he came here. We're improving Watts. Woods, potentially, we're improving. Hardy, obviously, we've converted to a permanent, but I mean, I know Sam would disagree, but I mean, Fauna will be better for the experience. And these loan players that we're improving, probably not coming back to us next season. Someone like granted, you don't necessarily take them if they're not available, but it's just a bit annoying that we've now got, for example, Woods, who's going to fill a squad place until the end of the season, then go, and that it would have been better if we could have brought in a permanent centre-back and start to build for next season in defence, whereas, as Fraser's well aware, at this point we go into July and we'll have literally no contract to defend.
It is strange. I look at it like, well, first of all, Yanoi Donasien was essentially our choice, wasn't he? He was the defender we wanted. And I think we thought we could have got him, but then Ipswich decided to do some random thing with loans where it doesn't make sense.
Bad ownership in my opinion. I'm not surprised at all if Donasien leaves for free in the summer. And the chairman is, because so he refused to take 50 grand now, has got nothing and paid more for it.
Yeah, unless there's something we can't see. But we've felt like we've created, like, the problems we've had this season have been in defence, in that defensive area. I'm talking about defensive midfield, and I'm talking about the centre backs. And We've made some good signings in Hardy, in Cooper in the summer, in Ennis, in potentially, probably Panucci Kamara in terms of longer term contracts and getting these young promising players tied down for the future so we can build on it and improve the overall quality of the squad. But for me, unless you come up with some miracle in the summer, it doesn't seem very smart doing that and then not having any centre-backs contracted to the club. So then you have to bring five new centre-backs in.
Yeah,
five new centre-backs in because you need cover on the bench.
Consistency or stability there.
Yeah.
You're building completely from scratch. Unless Ameson, of course, could stay. But as far as I'm aware, his contract's going to be up and, he could be off.
So my point being, what does it mean if you've got stability at one end of the pitch and you, ultimately, if we're, we want to be getting to the championship, so I don't think it's too much of me to say we should be pushing for playoffs next season. If you build on it, mid-table, playoffs, promotion, say it like that, right? So, but if you start slowly because you haven't bought, you haven't got the continuity between defenders, it's like, I don't know. But maybe I'll be able to eat my words. I hope so anyway.
I think our defence is always, though, the rebuild job of the defence is always going to happen. I don't think, obviously it's started now to a degree, and I know what you mean, but it was always going to happen. I don't think the defence was, really up to it into what we want. Now, I know me and Nick have disagreed on the defensive element of the team, but I think it's just part and parcel. Now, I disagree slightly on what our aim should be next season. If we get playoffs, great, but I think we will have only been in the division for two seasons. There are a lot of big clubs in this division.
No, I'd
love to get the playoffs next season, but all of a sudden we're on an upward trajectory and the fans are all expecting of big things. I think the rebuild at the back was sort of inevitable because the players that we've signed or that we inherited, or not we, but Lowe inherited, weren't really the quality to start hitting in that top half of the championship. And we're just going to have to take it, but the
top
good
half
thing
of
is...
the championship.
The top half, yeah. Well, they're certainly not that good.
Oh, right. We have our disagreements with the defenders, but I fully agree they are not top half championship.
Yeah, they're not quite that good. But you know what I mean? So I think, I know what you mean. I know the concerns of what we need to, but if we had kept, other than maybe Canavan, but Scott Wooten wasn't going to be in part of our long-term plans for the defence anyway. And there were always an element of loan deals. I mean, I think it's a little bit premature to worry about it yet. We need to see what happens in the summer. See what, I would like to see. I think the distribution of loan players needs to be a little bit more even. So, you maybe have a striker on loan, a midfielder on loan, a defender on loan, rather than where we've got our whole defence in on loan.
Yeah. And defensive mid.
Yeah, so maybe that, but then sometimes needs must and that, do you know what I mean? Like, we don't know who's available, who's not available, and at the end of the day, I don't think Woods was our first choice, but I think, we've probably done some sums and realised that we can play him cheaper than we can Wooten.
You add to it now, you think, well... So, Donasian, our first target, weren't able to get him. We looked around. Probably no one wants to sell many defenders in January. So, we're not going to, and we wouldn't have got a massive sum for Canavan. So I think, and then we got rid of Wooten. So, maybe just trying to save up for the summer when we get a primary target, whether that be Donasian on a free, say, or someone like someone potentially better even. So maybe it is about that. You're just about the next season and stuff.
I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with us, being frugal with our cash. As long as it's not at the detriment of what division we're in. I think, there are these new measures with the salary caps to protect clubs. But I think if Hallett is looking after the pennies in some regards and going, well, actually, this person's better off. We're better off not paying his wages and putting the pocket in the cash for a rainy day, so to speak. I'd rather that, you see some chairman that would just rather spend all their money than, on whoever, rather than be sensible. So there are risks with this transfer window. It's not been as spectacular as some have made out, but I think it's quite prudent. And,
the thing that's getting me though, right, is that we will be, inevitably, based on our previous wage spend that has been published by the club and based on know, the contracts that were pre-existing for the season, we will be spending, you know, well over the actual salary cap limit, because players like Mayer, players like, you know, Canavan, all those signed before the salary cap came in will be on those inflated wages, which will now, which means that when we come into next season, we will easily be able to spend the top limit of that actual wage bracket, right? So my only concern here is the wages we're saving from someone like Wootton and Nubley by loaning them out, not selling them. You know, we then can't spend, you know, we're not going to spend extra on wages.
No,
so but if we're going to make some player signings, then using that money, fair enough. If that money is being saved because of the, you know, the loss in income due to COVID, fair enough. But that's just the sort of the square that I want circling, you know?
Well, yeah, and I know what you mean. Like, it may not come back in on, because you're right, with the salary cap, it may not come back in players. But there's also, like, you know, there are so much other areas that you can spend money as a football club, you know, and you know, I think Simon Hallett has spent a great deal of money on improving areas in other areas. So, like, it's the most confident I've been about our financial sort of goings on in a long, long, long while.
Absolutely.
So, you know, we have seemingly got a good plan with, you know, and there's always a little bit of luck with it, but that Jeff Cott's going to be a gold mine. There's a good chance Mike Cooper's going to be a gold mine. And, you know, if we can rinse and repeat with a few other players over the next few years, yes, that money may not be able to go in on salaries, but it can go on transfer fees. It can just also be put in the bank for when we get in the championship.
Because
there's no salary cap then. So yeah,
also in a world where there is a salary cap, that's going to make the transfer fee king to an extent. In a world where you can't, you know, trump a player by saying, yeah, we'll give you this amount of money because
it will be the money,
everyone can pay the exact same amount. Albeit, you know, League One, you've got an advantage over League Two, because you're going to be allowed to spend more per player. You know, that ability to pay a fee might well be the thing that, you know, and you'll get another club saying, no, you can't talk to them. You can only talk to this club. They're willing to pay us more. So that might be where the salary cap takes us. We might see an inflation in transfer fees to make up for the deflation in wages. But we should probably move on, because we have actually got a game to talk about as well. after all that, actually, drama on deadline day, given what happened. And of course, good luck as well. We should probably say good luck to all the players that that have left. I heard Scott Wootton did a decent job against Twin, or at least I think I heard that. Good luck to him. I'm just going to point this one out, not to try and tempt fate. If Wootton gets relegated with Wigan, that will be three consecutive League One relegations in a row with three different clubs: MK Dons 2018, Argyle 2019, Wigan 2021. So hopefully for him, we can break that cycle. Obviously, I just couldn't resist putting that one up. Obviously, 2-2 draw with Accrington. Finn, would you, how much do you remember of the game after all that?
Yeah, I was again, some goals probably could have done better with both of them. Yeah, actually should have done better with both of them. But I think that particularly, and look, I'm going to big up Ben Reeves now. Like for the last sort of 20 minutes when he came on the pitch and we started moving the ball forward a bit more when we needed that goal, I thought that was some of the best attacking football in the last 20 minutes that I've seen us play this season. I thought we could have gone and won it in the end, really. And I think we were sort of unlucky not to, really. And I mean, Danny Mayer, probably, you know, we've talked a lot about him being more productive in terms of numbers. But an assist for him on Saturday, and probably up there in at least his top three performances in an Argyle shirt so far. I thought he was absolutely excellent. I thought everything went through him. He got shots off. Yeah, okay, he didn't score, but he shot, which is more than he usually does. About five.
That's such. I'm sorry. I you know, I'm a Mayer fan, but that is such a low bar.
Yeah.
No, I'm being
I know what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I just found it amusing where in an attempt to defend Danny Bear, he took a shot.
Yeah. I mean,
I thought it was his. I thought it was Danny Mayer's best game in an Argyle shirt. I thought he was brilliant, and I'm not the first to compliment Danny, as everybody knows. He did have, I think he had about 5 or 6 shots in the end. I mean, they weren't great by any stretch of the imagination. I think a traffic cone would have saved at least 3 of them. But it's great when he plays quickly and he makes quick decisions. He is so difficult to defend against. You know, there was a goal earlier in the season where he beat his man and cut it back for Jeffcott, and that it's almost like if Ryan Lowe can, you know, Danny Mayer's what, 30, is he? He's certainly in the latter stages of his career. If he can work with Ryan Lowe and with Schumacher and add that decision making to his game and to his dribbling skill, he'll find another level at this stage of his career, which is brilliant. I've said before, I find him absolutely infuriating because it's like having all the pieces of the jigsaw and then just taking one of them and just throwing it away. And then he's got everything there. He just needs to put it together. And I think he did that, you know, and he's clearly being told to shoot more because he's starting to see it creep into his game. You know, the shots weren't great. I think one went narrowly wide and the rest went straight at the goalkeeper. But it is a low bar. You know, he is a very talented player and he's an attacking-minded player. He should be scoring more. He should be shooting more. But he hasn't been. And if he can improve that and work on it, it's only going to benefit him and benefit us. Hope he carries on.
Why don't we just do the FIFA drill I haven't played FIFA in years, but do you remember the FIFA drill? Where there's literally, they hang a target in the top corner, right?
Yeah.
And what we're going to do is going to put down, you know, one of those, the sort of yellow metal and they're meant to represent a player, right?
Yeah.
Literally. So, Danny, this is the drill we're going to do. I've got 500 balls here. You're going to take a touch around the player and you're going to hit the target in the top corner. Do it 500 times, and I don't care if you can't do it at home because the dimensions of the goal might be slightly different. The dimensions of the box might be slightly different. But at home park, you will know that from here, I need, you know, it'll just be muscle memory to hit the top corner. I know it's not as simple as that, but for the love of God, please say we've actually tried that.
He's got so he just takes players out of the game, and for all the debate of Mayer versus Carey. I mean, Carey wins it hands down. But the one skill that Danny Mayer has, the way that Danny Mayer goes past a man with absolute just simplicity, as if the person is one of those yellow people just stuck in the ground, he takes players out of the game.
Are they called training dummies? I think they're called training dummies instead of yellow people.
he takes people out of the game. And it's just, there are so many times we've had it where, like, Danny Mayer skinned one man or he skinned two man and then he runs into a cul-de-sac and then
I almost think he's messy up until the finish sometimes.
Like, but he did it. How good was that goal? We can complain about his lack of shots and goals, and I've done enough of that on this podcast. But that goal was when he was quick passing and quick dribbling. It was sublime.
Yeah. It's unreal. That's like a top level goal. No, like Matt, if you. That's like a goal that Man City routinely score. You know, those are the goals when Ryan Lowe came in and he was about getting the wing backs forward, you know, he kind of talked through his principles. That is exactly the kind of goal, you know, quick 1-2 passing, little back heel, cut back goal. Like, you're not
3-4, wasn't it? It was a 3-4. 1-2-3-4.
Oh, yeah, 1-2-3-4. And shout out to Niall Ennis as well because, I mean, like, he got the finish and that
back heel as well.
Yeah, back heel. Yeah, great. But Danny Mayer, yeah, really good. And like Sam's not on the podcast right now, but I do agree with him that he has brung another level to his game in the last couple of months. And just if he can get that goal, if he can get 4 goals between now and the end of the season, then great.
Not just that. If Danny Mayer gets 4 or 5 goals by the end of the season, I think we'll be in the playoff picture, and I'll tell you why. Because at the moment, we've got other people scoring, right?
Yeah.
We've kept Jeffcott, which, you know, Fraser was wetting himself about going into January. Jeffcott's going to leave. If Danny Mayer can add goals, then that's going to be an extra few points. And there's extra few
points. I thought you were
going to
say,
like
I thought you were going to say if Danny Meyer can add goals, any player can add goals. And I was about to say he's not that bad.
Like, I mean, Will Ames has been doing his best to try and show him off. He had that lovely volley against Sheffield United that went wide. Then he had the volley against, or whatever it was, the 40-yard show against Swindon.
I also love
it wider than it looked.
I love the fact that Joe Edwards is just all of a sudden just a scoring wing back. Like, I think he's had a fantastic season, and he still keeps cropping up with shots on goal.
Yeah.
But I think he's clearly being worked on with Danny Meyer, and I think that's what's interesting, and that's what I mean by taking his game to the next level. He's not. I know Ryan Lowe came out and defended him in the week about his goal scoring record, but I think he's working on it because he's shooting more. So
the thing I think about that like the comments about his goal scoring record is like those are just things you say in the press. He's obviously onto him about goals because he's there. Like a player of Danny Meyer's quality should be scoring more goals. There's no two ways about it.
I mean, I don't know. I don't think he's onto it. I think Danny Meyer's a guy who loves to play football, who you know is quite relaxed about it and just tends to probably. I reckon he probably is one of those players who does best when he's enjoying his football. You know, and I think that. Lowe, you know, he knows Danny Meyer pretty damn well. Played with him, managed him. You know, I would not. I don't know this. I wouldn't be surprised if he is just one of those people who need arm around the shoulder sort of thing. They don't need constant tasks. You know, they don't need the training dummy and the target and the goal. Though I fully recommend it, and I would love that to happen. Can we get a live Argyle cam on that? And just what you know when they had the cameras in Home Park for the development. I just want to watch that over and over again.
Surely that's what we could bring Scott Wooten back and just stand Scott Wooten in the clouds.
No, Scott, wear this yellow bib.
Stand there and don't move.
Sorry, it's something worth saying about Meyer that every time, like, you know, they put up on Twitter, like, before the game when they have, like, the shooting drills and stuff, Danny Meyer routinely plants these balls into the corner.
Oh, that just makes it all the worse. So he can do it when there's...
But, And like I hadn't seen him many times, like and as an opposition player, but I remember that game where we were on a really good run of form. I mean, I think it was about December. They were like the worst team in the league, and it was the game that Ryan Lowe got sent off for. Well,
apparently, this season or last season?
No, sorry, it's 2017-18 I'm talking about.
I was going to say Ryan Lowe got sent off.
Right, Ryan Lowe got sent off for Bury.
We beat Bury 3-0. Right, I'm with you now. Sorry, I was trying to work out what you're talking about. I thought it meant that Lowe, the manager, as manager of Argyle, had been sent off. I couldn't think it had happened. Yeah, we beat him 3-0. Sarcevic scored one, Carey penalty, Diaguara, I think.
Yeah, I think that was it. And essentially, my point was is that they were the worst team in the league, and obviously he hadn't been converted into a centre midfielder. But I think him and, Zeli Ismail, and Meyer were on the two best players on the pitch, and they were on alternate wings, and they caused us problems for about half an hour before we scored, and then we were on such a good run and they were on such a poor run of form that obviously it kind of unraveled for them. But that was the only time I'd seen Meyer not playing an Argyle shirt, and I was even impressed with him then, if that makes sense.
We actually scored after the 14th minute. I looked it up because I could have sworn we scored like in the third minute, but I think that was a different game with Diaguara. I think that might have been the 1-0 win. Something that bugs me though, right, you remember that Hardy chance where it just fell to him in the box and he took a touch, hit it, blocked. It just sort of rebounded to him in the box.
Yeah.
You know which one I'm on about, Fraser?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that is indicative of, that moment there is indicative of why not only Hardy but also Meyer aren't scoring as many goals as they should. And it's that Hardy there, when he takes that touch, he is thinking, how can I set myself best to score? But he's neglecting that the defence is not ready for him to shoot. And he's just purely thinking about how he can increase the odds of him getting the ball where he, you know, to shoot at the goal where he wants to. And it contrasted in my head with Jeff Gott's goal at Crewe. And it's very similar in that the ball rebounds to them. They're both facing away from goal as the ball comes to them. The defenders are nowhere near ready, you know, because, you know, the ball's not expected to end up there. Jeff Gott hits it first time. It's quite close to the goalkeeper. It's a, no, not a great finish. Keeper's not ready, defence is not ready, and it squirms in, you know, and that's a goal. Yeah. Hardy takes a touch, he takes a second, and all of a sudden he's got into great position so he can bang it into the bottom corner. Keeper set, defenders get close, blocks it. And it just reminds me of Mayer all the time, whereby Mayer, you know, when he's dribbling, he's like, this isn't quite the perfect angle. Let me take another touch, you know. And, you know, you've in the box, when it's that close, you've got seconds and touches before the team crowds players between you and goal, and they get more
Jeff
players back
so
around
at
the box. Yeah, Jeff but got it. It's reminiscent of Harry Kane when he started. I remember that match of the day doing analysis back when Harry Kane, you know, was literally just, no one really properly knew who he was just scoring for Spurs. And they did a bit of analysis on him and said, look, this guy hits it so early that it doesn't really matter, you know, how well he hits it. Sorry, where exactly he goes in the goal. Because the keeper's not ready, defence's not ready. He gets power behind it and hits the target. And you do it enough times, you get goals as a reward. And, you know, Hardy's just not in that mindset, you know. He doesn't score first-time finishes. His only first-time finish is against Wigan from outside the box. You know, everything else is a touch or more.
So just quickly, Mayer did score, like, a great goal against Swindon, unfortunately, offside. So we are seeing signs of it, like changing, which is great going into this latter part of the season.
Mm. But, yeah, like I said, I just... Lowe, why aren't you doing this work with Ryan Hardy? Why can't Ryan Hardy finish a first-time shot, you know? It's not just the shooting, it's also the positioning. You know, Jeffcott tends to get himself in those positions better. I'm kind of disappointed with Lowe on that front, but Hardy's still young. He's now got time to work with Ryan Lowe. I just want to see him, you know, some visible signs of progress that, you know, he is getting himself, he understands where to be.
Like Kamara.
Yeah, exactly. Because, you know, that's clear and obvious signs of improvement. That he knows where to be when the ball's coming in, and that he's got the confidence and the ability to just hit it first time, knowing that, I mean, like, look at, there are a chunk of these goals that Jeff got scored where he hasn't hit that smoothly, you know, but it's gone in because he's hit it early.
Yeah.
Work on it.
Yeah.
With that, predictions, Portsmouth. What do you think?
We haven't beaten them in 5 years, which isn't great. The last time was in the playoffs. Yeah, that's the last time we beat them. To be fair, we've only lost twice since then and drawn the rest. But yeah, we've not beaten them. So I'm going to go for another draw. It looks like we tend to be goals, so I'm going to go for a 2-2 draw. But I would like to beat them because Portsmouth are quite annoying, aren't they? They're quite irritating in many ways. that's probably putting it kindly, but I don't think we will.
Finn?
Yeah, I mean, I think we should have beaten them
October.
October, and when they were on a poor run of form, and that was the last game before we went really on a bad run of form.
Watts decided to do a Superman impression, wasn't it, in his own box?
I love is how Sam tried to defend that for so long. It was a natural position, and to be fair, maybe he was right given the Sheffield United penalty, and VAR agreed with.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. I think, yeah, so...
I also worry whenever John Marquise is in the opposition side. Like, he's such a good player.
I mean, they have got a few, and that's the thing. Like, they won on a very good run of form, and now they've picked up, and then they've slumped off a little bit. So, I think it's going to be a tough game. I wouldn't be surprised if we lost by the odd goal, but I'm going to go positive because I really want to beat them, and I'm going to go 2-1 win.
I mean, we are unbeaten this year, bar Sheffield United, which I think is a fair exception, given that
they did beat Man United as well. So, you know, they beat Man United, who won 9-0 last night. So Sheffield United are a very, very good team.
And they won it. I think they've lost one game, like, in between that. Like, Man United, they lost to Tottenham, I think. But
they lost to City as well.
Oh, City, yeah, sorry, yeah.
No shame in losing to the league leaders, though, is there? They're still a very, very good team.
Even so, since that...
We are... I feel like we're getting a little too hung up on the success of Sheffield United. we're unbeaten against League One opposition this year. Portsmouth obviously beat Charlton, but other than that, have been on a relatively poor run. They lost to Hull. 4-0 to Hull. I think Jack Watmore got two own goals in that game. But then got sent off in the next one.
Ooh.
Which is a pretty, that's an awful week. I think it
I mean,
was
you could
Tuesday,
be Bednarek.
Saturday. I'd still rather not be Watmore. Two own goals followed by the red card. I think that's worse. And they lost that game that he went down to 10 men as well. Obviously beat Charlton. Pompey are in poor form, but I think they're good at home as far as I remember. Obviously, we're turning around our away performances. You know, on balance of play, I'm going to go with the draw, I think, and score draw, probably 2-2.
We have of the games we've played since we beat them, we have drawn with them two or twice.
Yeah.
We've had
lots of draws with them. Going back to when we first played them, first game was 1-1. Next game after that was 3-3. Then we lost 2-1, 1-2-1, drew 2-2, 1-1-0.
I do have to say, though, Nick, we have played Portsmouth before 2013.
Oh, yeah, I know, but I mean, that was the first time of this sort of spell, you know what I mean?
Actually, it wasn't. We beat them 3-0 in the League Cup in 2012.
Yeah, okay, but have you seen the team they put out? Well, no, what I mean is, for all that time, we were relatively, you know, similar level, and you could sort of compare the teams.
Yeah.
So that's a fair comparison. Otherwise, we may as well start bringing in the FA Cup game. You know,
we kind of pushed on after our relegation, obviously. But I still think it's always going to be a good game against Portsmouth. They might change it, but you know,
I mean, yeah, I'm sort of in agreement with Fraser. I'm not sure we'll win. So yeah, I think the draw. But anyhow, that's green and white. And it's no more transfers, or at least free transfers, but for a while now, which is a shame. Always like silly season. But yeah, this has been Green and White. Thank you all so much for listening. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.